They have not stopped violence. In fact, they have increased the levels of violence.
Deadly violence in Myanmar as a peace treaty anniversary passes. It's Monday, March 1st. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us online at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, a landmark social media law. Clubhouse redefines online speech. Chinese COVID vaccine flows into Africa. U.S. inoculation surge, space news, and walking safely in New York. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Security forces in Myanmar fired on protesters Sunday, killing at least 18 people and leaving more than 30 others injured in the deadliest day of demonstrations since the February 1st military coup. That's according to the UN Human Rights Office. A statement from the UN Human Rights Office called on the military to immediately halt the use of force against peaceful protesters. The new U.S. ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, tweeted, "We stand in solidarity with the people of Burma, who have displayed determination and courage in rejecting this military coup," as she used another name for Myanmar. Popular protests have been held across Myanmar on a daily basis since the military detained de facto leader Aung San Suu Kyi and other members of the civilian government last month, claiming widespread fraud in last November's election, which Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy Party won in a landslide. The junta has declared a one-year state of emergency, as Myanmar's Electoral Commission denied the military's claim of election fraud. Meanwhile, turbulence remains in Afghanistan. The Taliban and the United States signed a peace agreement on February 29th last year. But a year later, it remains unclear if U.S. troops will be leaving Afghanistan. Bejan Hamdard reports.
The four-point peace agreement followed months of talks and came after nearly two decades of war in Afghanistan. The United States agreed to withdraw all of its troops from Afghanistan by May 1st if the Taliban upheld its commitments. However, some analysts say the agreement is in jeopardy.
We're getting to a point in just a few weeks on May 1st when, according to the U.S.-Taliban deal, U.S. forces should be out of the country, that they are all remaining U.S. troops are meant to leave the country. Assuming the Taliban has upheld its commitments, the U.S. will probably argue the Taliban has not upheld its commitments. The Taliban will say that it has.
The Taliban maintain they have honored the deal by reducing their military operations and not killing any Americans.
After the agreement, everyone has witnessed, including our dear country and countrymen, that before the agreement, we used to carry out major attacks on intelligence and military bases. But after the agreement, these operations have stopped.
According to a February report by the United Nations, more than 8,800 civilian casualties were documented in 2020, of which 3,035 were deaths. Representative Michael Watts says that demonstrates the Taliban have failed to honor the agreement.
They have not stopped violence. In fact, they have increased the levels of violence, both to the Afghan National Security Forces and to the Afghan people. We've seen repeated attacks around the country.
American public opinion surveys have shown declining support for the war, and the Trump administration prioritized reducing overseas troop deployments, which some analysts say has made the situation more challenging for President Joe Biden.
The way that the Trump administration continued to draw down troop presence in Afghanistan in the year after the deal was signed, regardless of conditions on the ground, seemed to deliver exactly the message to the Taliban that so many critics of the deal had worried about in the first place. It really does place Biden and his team in a difficult position. To walk out of a deal would create problems, but implementing the deal certainly will as well.
The intra-Afghan negotiations between the Afghan government and the Taliban, which started in September of 2020 in Doha, are moving at a slower pace than expected as the two sides discuss issues such as women's rights and freedom of the press.
According to the Afghan constitution, all Afghans are equal, both men and women. But the Taliban say they want to implement Islamic women's rights. But what is Islamic women's rights? Well, anyone can have their own interpretation of Islamic and Sharia laws.
As the negotiations continue, so does fighting as the country marks 19 years at war. Behzhan Hamdard, VOA News.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. Russia seeks to strengthen old ties with Myanmar junta. Myanmar doctor prevented from treating wounded protesters. Dozens of Hong Kong Democrats charged under national security law. Powerful countries come under fire at UN Human Rights Council. Chinese investment in Australia plummets amid tensions. You'll find these stories and much more on Facebook at VOA Asia. And stop by our VOAnews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Australia's federal parliament late last week gave its final approval to a law to make Google and Facebook pay for news content posted on their platforms. The legislation is the first of its kind in the world, as we hear from Phil Mercer in Sydney.
The News Media and Digital Platforms Mandatory Bargaining Code gained final parliamentary approval Thursday and will soon become law when it's formally approved by Governor-General David John Hurley. The legislation is designed to make Facebook and Google pay for news items on their platforms, but government amendments allow them to negotiate financial deals with Australian news organisations. If that process fails, the digital platforms would be forced into arbitration. Much has changed in the past few days. Last week, Facebook blocked Australian users from sharing or viewing news stories on its platform. The move was a direct challenge to the Australian government over contentious social media regulation. The ban had widespread implications. According to a Reuters Institute report, up to 40% of Australians turned to Facebook for news between 2018 and 2020. Facebook insisted that media companies benefited the most from this arrangement because it increased internet traffic and revenue to their websites. Traditional media companies complain that Facebook and Google were profiting from their journalism without paying for it. There followed a tense standoff between one of the world's most successful technology companies and senior ministers in Canberra. Days of negotiations led to concessions on both sides, and Facebook reversed its news blackout in Australia. The head of Australia's Competition and Consumer Commission, Rod Sims, says he hopes the legislation will curb the immense power of the two dominant digital platforms.
Google and Facebook need media, but they don't need any particular media company. And that meant media companies couldn't do commercial deals with Facebook or Google. The purpose of the code is to give them the potential for arbitration, which helps their bargaining position and therefore helps them reach fair commercial deals.
Google had threatened to withdraw its primary search engine from Australia, but it has signed deals with major publishers and broadcasters worth collectively about $47 million. Facebook has signed at least one deal with Seven West Media, a major Australian media company, and is in negotiations with other Australian media companies. Analysts have said that Facebook's ban last week on Australian news content was intended as a warning to lawmakers in other parts of the world, including Britain and Canada, who are watching carefully Australia's attempt at social media regulation. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, China's foreign ministry spokesperson Wang Wenbin said that Indian and Chinese troops have completed a pullout from a lake area on their disputed border in the Western Himalayas. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Glad you're with us today as we begin a brand new week on VOA Asia. And there's a new player in the social media web space. You may know it. It's called Clubhouse. But unlike other social media platforms, this one is not just open to anyone. It swept across many areas, including China. Maria Pru looked into why the platform became so popular so fast.
New York Times best-selling author Rahaf Harfush is hosting a discussion on a new social media platform called Clubhouse. She spends at least 2 to 3 hours a day there, hosting 3 weekly shows, co-hosting others, and listening to others still.
There are chefs and movie producers and entrepreneurs and artists and writers and athletes, and everybody is like finding their own group, and everyone is thinking about how they can contribute.
Harfush says the most interesting discussions happen in closed groups. But even in open rooms, there's plenty to listen to. Shows hosted by people like Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, or Jared Leto.
Thanks for inviting me up. It's good to hang with all of you.
All right, Vlad, what really happened? Give us the inside scoop.
The network is invite-only, and for now is only available on iPhones. The platform doesn't allow recorded discussions unless the speaker gives a special permission to have the talk recorded. However, the users violate the rule way too often. In recent weeks, the number of Clubhouse users skyrocketed from 600,000 to 8 million, pushing the company's value to $1 billion.
This really enables people to have a real-time audio experience, much like a group chat, like over voice, but you might be connecting with people you don't know yet, or you might be connecting with existing friends.
Ouyang has so far counted almost 30 similar Clubhouse competitors, and by the end of the year, he expects there to be more than 100. One big downside is privacy issues. Users should always assume they're being recorded, but that's not all.
For example, online bullying or misinformation or other nefarious acts or people just committing scams that could possibly lead people astray, let alone false information being spread even by foreign state actors and from every potential location on the globe.
For now, Clubhouse is free, but experts say in future the company might consider premium accounts, paid subscriptions, and advertising. Maria Bruce for VOA News, Washington.
VOA Asia Facebook is the choice of millions to see and read the latest stories about Asia and the United States. Follow us on VOA Asia Facebook and say hello online or on your smartphone. Subscribe to all of our platforms for free. See, hear, and read and share all of the latest from VOA Asia anytime. VOA Asia is your trusted source for news and great features.
This news from VOA Asia. United Nations Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet said that China is restricting basic civil and political freedoms in the name of national security and COVID-19 measures. You'll find all the big stories throughout the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues and as countries kick off vaccination campaigns in Africa amid mistrust over COVID-19 vaccine efficacy, health ministers are among the first ones to be taking the shots. VOA's Mariama Diallo reports on Senegal and Zimbabwe, two countries that began inoculating their populations using Sinopharm. That's the Chinese-made COVID-19 vaccine.
Senegal received 200,000 doses of the Chinese-made COVID-19 vaccine. Health Minister Abdoulaye Diouf Sarr was the first in line to mark what he called a historic day.
That is to have in Senegal.
Senegal is one of 7 countries among the 54 countries of the African continent to start the vaccination against COVID-19.
Priorities include healthcare workers, people over 60, and those with underlying health conditions. SAR says in addition to the Chinese vaccine, the country is also looking at other possibilities to increase their stock. Senegal is due to receive nearly 1.3 million vaccine doses through the World Health Organization-led COVAX initiative, which deployed a batch of 600,000 in Ghana this week, as part of a first wave of coronavirus vaccines being sent to a number of low- and middle-income countries. In Zimbabwe, Vice President Constantino Chiwenga, also the country's health minister, volunteered for the first Chinese-made vaccine as well. Amid reports of public mistrust over vaccine safety, Chiwenga said his ministry had done its homework.
My ministry conducted all scientific processes to ascertain the efficacy of Sinopharm vaccine.
Zimbabwe received 200,000 doses from the Sinopharm vaccine as a donation from the Chinese government. Another 600,000 doses purchased by Zimbabwe are expected to arrive early next week, according to government officials. Vaccine recipient Michael Chideme says he's relieved to have taken the shot, but
taking the jab does not mean I will not be able to, I will not get the disease. I'll be extra cautious, but I'm happy I've taken the jab.
Zimbabwe, like many other African countries, initially recorded low coronavirus numbers in the first months of the pandemic, but subsequently saw cases go up. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Making headlines in Asia, nearly 120,000 doses of Pfizer vaccine arrived at Incheon Airport in South Korea, obtained through the WHO-backed COVAX program. The government says the Pfizer vaccine is now being administered to medical staff treating coronavirus patients. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, U.S. President Joe Biden commemorated last week the 50 millionth shot of the COVID-19 vaccine since his swearing in, just days after the nation had passed 500,000 coronavirus deaths. We hear more from White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swara.
President Joe Biden on Thursday celebrated the pace of his administration's effort to vaccinate Americans, hitting 50 million shots in 37 days, half of his target of 100 million shots in 100 days.
We're moving in the right direction, though, despite the mess we inherited from the previous administration.
More than 45 million Americans have been given at least one dose of the approved Pfizer or Moderna vaccine, with more than 20 million receiving both doses. A third vaccine is also nearing approval.
If the FDA approves the use of this new vaccine, we have a plan to roll it out as quickly as Johnson & Johnson can make it.
Unlike the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines, Johnson & Johnson's does not need to be stored in ultra-cold temperatures and can be given as a single dose. The company said it can deliver 20 million doses by the end of March. Biden said by April or May, there may be more vaccines than Americans who want them because of vaccine hesitancy. The administration is planning to launch a campaign to combat disinformation about the shots.
This epidemic of misinformation is also rampant in those populations that we need to target the most. And this includes African American and Latino populations, where there is a historic hesitance and mistrust of the formal health system due to decades of abuse and poor treatment of these minority groups.
Biden also met virtually with the nation's governors on plans to speed up distribution even further.
The single most important thing after ensuring supply that the federal government can do is to standardize reporting. So it's clear in every state exactly what's happening. What percentage of people are getting vaccinated each week? What proportion of white, black, Latinx, Asian, Native American, Alaskan, Indian, Alaskan Native and American Indian populations are vaccinated, and how that compares with the statewide population? What gets measured can get managed. Right now, we're flying blind.
Despite encouraging news, this week the U.S. surpassed 500,000 coronavirus-related deaths, which Biden marked with a candle lighting ceremony and a moment of silence at the White House. Patsy Whitaker-Swara, VOA News.
Since successfully landing on Mars last week, the U.S. space agency NASA's Perseverance rover has been thrilling Earthlings with images and sounds recorded from the Martian surface. VOA's Arash Arabasadi has been listening in.
After 7 months hurtling through space, NASA's six-wheeled Perseverance rover landed on Mars. The U.S. Space Agency released this video showing the first high-quality images of the spacecraft landing on the Red Planet. Its navigation cameras captured this 360-degree view of the landing site. Scientists also equipped Perseverance with two microphones. One of them was activated for landing and failed, but NASA managed to capture this audio of Martian wind just after touchdown. Dave Gruhl is a team lead at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. He says this latest finding can help sustain the rover and its mission on Mars.
The noise is an incredible thing that engineers can use to basically detect the health of moving systems. If we get a snapshot of a actuator today, and you can compare over time, do another snapshot, another audio file of that actuator in the future, compare the two and see if there's anything that can be learned in terms of the health of that device.
In addition to the microphones, NASA equipped Perseverance with a record 25 cameras. Other technology on board may help NASA's Artemis Lunar Exploration Program that recently suffered a setback while testing its Space Launch System moon rocket. Former NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine says it's all part of a process.
This was a successful day. We didn't get everything we wanted, and yes, we're going to learn and we're going to have to make adjustments. But again, this is a test, and this is why we test.
NASA cut short a hot fire test in which engines were supposed to burn for 8 minutes to simulate a massive new rocket's climb to orbit. But just 67 seconds in, an engine failure pumped the brakes. This week, NASA delayed a second hot fire test, potentially stalling the Artemis lunar landing program until next year. Finally, a doorbell camera in Alberta, Canada captured this video of a bright meteor passing by. The American Meteor Society commented, "The brighter the fireball, the more rare the event." Parts of the United States saw it too. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
A string of subway crimes has prompted a New Yorker to start a program to safely escort subway riders in his neighborhood. A Black Lives Matter activist now has hundreds of volunteers to help him. Nina Vesneva reports, Anna Rice narrates.
They gather together as the sun goes down, sometimes in pairs, sometimes in larger groups, depending on the day. Groups of New York City residents who help keep people safe in some of the city's most unsafe neighborhoods. Founder of Safe Walks NYC, Peter Carey, says it may take time to see the impact of their work.
It would take a while. You know, things that, like this that, you know, start organically take a while. It would take several months. People just need to see that there's progress.
Carey says he decided to act after hearing about a string of attacks on women in a Bushwick station surrounded by construction and dimly lit streets.
And I just felt I had to do something after seeing the fifth attack and seeing the pictures of the lady badly bruised. I felt that I had to do something about it.
The police stood on duty near the subway station exit for a few days, put up leaflets, and even detained one perpetrator. But Carey wasn't confident that the attacks would stop at that.
So I just jumped on my bicycle and I came out here and I posted up at this station on the other end and also here just rotating back and forth, just trying to, you know, just be a presence in case I see someone.
Carey is a well-known New York City DJ. He worked with Alicia Keys and other music stars. Many know him by his active involvement in the Black Lives Matter movement as a cybersecurity specialist. He says the idea of safely escorting people seemed to resonate, and soon his friends and hundreds of volunteers joined the effort. Carey says he vets volunteers, and Noah keeps in touch with most of them.
We're all busy people living and working in New York City, but we all try to meet up at least once a week. I live very close to this train station where we've been operating from. I will be here at least one or two times per week.
Carey says he and his volunteers don't want to become some kind of volunteer police force to keep the city safe. Their only task is to help people walk home safely.
We are not following the traditional methods people go by when setting up security infrastructures, whereby it's a man who is determining what they feel is safe for a woman. We're having women at the forefront speaking and saying this is how things can be done to enable us to feel safe.
The volunteers are working to expand how and where they offer help. For Nina Vishnova in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
That's our program. Thanks for listening to VOA Asia. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube until we come back at the same time tomorrow. We also thank our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a super day ahead. Be safe. Be well.